Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Off the Post. I'm Russ Cohen. We got Anthony Mangione. And how are you?
Hanging in there, Russ. How are you?
Good. So, interesting Friday night. There's been a lot of NHL action, but we'll talk about that later. Right now we've got Catherine Jean on. She writes the Ottawa 67s report, and she covers the 67s and the CHL, and she does marketing, scouting, analysis, all those good things. It says you cover curling, Catherine. I don't know if that's really a sport, but I'll let you get away with it. Thanks for coming on the show.
No problem.
So I always say that about curling because, to me, if you're a real sport, you have to have a commissioner. There's no commissioner of curling.
I guess that's a different perspective. But, yeah, no, it's really – you should really give it a chance. It's really more interesting than it looks from the outside. So.
Okay, I'll give you that. So let's talk a little bit. One of the things that I've been sort of talking about for – a couple of weeks is the Alex DeBrincat situation when it comes to the draft. I mean, even just, I guess, when it comes to just overall respect, because of his size, I mean, he's putting up tremendous points. You know, he put him up in high school.
Yeah.
Everywhere he's gone, he's dominated. And yet, while somebody will say, yes, he's leading, you know, the OHL, or, you know, he's got 2 points a game, or he's had 200-point seasons and it looks like he's going to have another, then they're like, yeah, but he'll probably go in the late first round of the draft. And, you know, I've covered a lot of drafts, and while there are a lot more smaller players in the league, I still feel there's a bias there with a lot of clubs and with a lot of media. Tell me if I'm wrong.
I know you're definitely right. I mean, I think he's in a similar circumstance as Travis Konecny was as well. He was putting up the points, but he was also always said that his size would keep him back, and they weren't sure. And anyway, so with DeBrincat, it's an interesting story for him too, because he was actually passed over to the OHL draft.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's right, he was a free
then
agent.
When
yeah.
he was playing, then last year when he was scoring all these points and everything, people just thought it was because of Connor McDavid and Dylan Strome. But I think this year he's definitely proved that it wasn't just Connor McDavid, because he's still leading the league in scoring, and no one really expected him to be in that situation. They thought it would be more of Michael Dal Cole, and he's just really taken on that. And so, yeah, he is a small player. I do compare him a little bit to Konecny, like the same type of player, where he's small, but he doesn't play like he's small. So he's not afraid to go into the corners. He's stronger than you would originally think. But, yeah, so he's good with that. But so he also just creates energy. He's not afraid to hit anyone. He has quick hands, quick shots, skates really well, and so that makes him really hard to contain. And I think one of the biggest things about both him and Konecny are that they have great hockey sense. So they're able to find the open areas, and they don't put themselves in bad scenarios as well. So and I know that he wasn't ranked in the draft in the early stages of the season, but he's starting to see some recognition now. So,
Catherine, talking about a little bit about the team you cover right now, the Ottawa 67s. I know they're second. They're second in the East right now, but I know you've indicated before that there's been some concerns with their consistency throughout the early part of the season. Give us a little bit of an overview as to where sort of the 67 stand right now.
So with the OHL East, it's actually a very tight conference right now. I think it's about 12 points separate first place and eighth place.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's about 5 points that separate the top five teams. So there's definitely a lot of room in there to move. But I think the 67s definitely have struggled at times. There's times where you're watching them play and you don't think they're playing well, but they still find ways to win. I think a lot of their struggles are definitely on the blue line. They have a very young blue line. They have about three veteran players, and one of the players, I personally don't believe he's a very good player myself, but he's definitely one of the leaders on the blue line. So I know at the start of the season, they were kind of struggling to find the identity. It's similar to how they were last season as well. But Jeff Brown has really come down hard on them, and then they decide to show up again, and then they kind of go back to that at times. But for the most part, it's been pretty positive. But I think they just need to get a couple defensemen, and they'll be in a better situation for sure.
Let's talk a little bit about Team Canada and their selections. One of the rare years where I don't really have a problem with any of the selections. I actually think they got it right. I mean, certainly I don't think Jared McCann or Jake Virtanen are going to be allowed to attend, because now with injuries, with Sutter being out, and just the way that team is, I can't see him just lending them. So I think those are two guys that aren't going to be available. And to me, the team looks good. You're a little closer to it. What do you think?
No, I agree as well. There wasn't very many surprises at all, like if any. I mean, you might throw out Josh Hosang, but that's been talked about so often. And I think just the fact that he wasn't in the Canada-Russia series just proves that he wasn't going to be considered for the team this year. A lot of people still feel he's a one-dimensional player with an attitude problems aside, or alleged attitude problems aside. So that's one thing with him, but he's certainly a very, very good offensive player. So for Team Canada, I find that this year that they're actually gone younger. So it's usually seen as like a 19-year-old tournament for Hockey Canada in the past. So they only want the 19-year-olds to be playing, but there's a really solid core of 97 born players. So the 18-year-olds, and, they'll lean on the likes of some of them, like Strome and Marner. And then they also actually have three players that are eligible for the draft this year. So I don't know if they'll actually make it. So, like, Jake Chychrun as one. I think he should, but it's kind of a wide open year, I find.
It's going to be hard, I think, for Chychrun to make it, though, because he is coming back from a shoulder injury, and there's a lot of competition at that position. Like, he's really going to have to dominate. Otherwise, I just have a feeling he's just going to, you know, he's going to end up going back. I'm not sure any of the young guys will really make it, but you never know, like you said.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. And actually, the interesting thing tonight is that, so they only brought in two goalies because they thought that they didn't want to, or they knew the two goalies that they wanted to play, and they didn't want to interrupt the other season. But Mackenzie Blackwood was one of them. He was actually just suspended. Well, he was involved in an incident tonight where he got a match penalty, which is a cause for automatic indefinite suspension. So it's possible that he could miss the tournament because it looked pretty bad. It was a slash towards the head area of another player. So, so as an example, like Sean Monahan was actually suspended 10 games at the end of November,
right?
And he wasn't allowed to play. So Hockey Canada upheld the suspension, and he wasn't allowed to try out for it. So,
see, this is why I always feel like, and Anthony and I have talked about this, when you have these camps, like, I get why at times you want to sort of limit it, but at goalie you should never have less than three going to camp. It's just, it's not a good idea, because you just never know what's going to happen. And this is something where now it's before camp, so they can correct it. But to me, when you do that limited thing, and that's usually something Team USA does, to be honest, in Canada, that's not usually their way. I think they're probably going to learn from this.
Well, the good thing with the tournament is that the rosters don't have to be set until the 24th of December, so they have tons of time. With it being in Finland, it's not as easy, but it's still just an overnight flight to get a goaltender down there if they need it, if say, one of them were to be injured. But now since it's before any of that, they can evaluate their options, I guess.
Catherine, I know we sort of pointed, and obviously knowing that Russ and I both cover the Philadelphia Flyers pretty extensively, mm-hmm. but obviously there's a lot of focus in Philadelphia on Travis Konecny. I know you've spoken to, and you've obviously covered him on a day-in, day-out basis. And looking at him this season, obviously he's amongst the league's lead scorers, but on a day-in, day-out basis, what are some of the areas of his game that you specifically look at and you say, watching him, that this is – And you know, the NHL caliber things, and what are some of the other things that you think he still has to grow on with?
I think the main thing is just becoming stronger. For things that he has to work on, just becoming stronger. Mm-hmm. He is still a very solid player. If you watch him, you can tell that he has a very strong leg. So it's, I guess, similar to on name, Marty St. Louis, but mm-hmm. I'm not saying he's like St. Louis, but that's the type of thing that he
lower body strength.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. And the other thing would just be his defensive game could be refined more, but he's really worked on that a lot over the last 2 years, and you can definitely see a difference. He's been put in several situations since his rookie season, so he's gained a lot of confidence from the coach. As for the things that I see that are great from him. He's always, whenever he's on the ice, he's always making something happen, whether he's actually scoring or not. There's always an impact of his play. And he's always been a bit more of a playmaker. So I don't know if you noticed, but he was off to a bit of a slow start. Mm-hmm. Once he kind of got going, he started to actually lead the league in scoring. And then it just kind of, leveled out, and then all the London Knights took over. So,
yeah,
and that's fairly typical for London as well. But he's definitely more of a playmaker, but he can be a scorer. If you see his goals, like he's very, very good in close, and he has very good hands. I do think that he needs to shoot more and mm-hmm. be more selfish at times.
Okay.
But I don't think he tends to overthink anything. He sees the game well. He knows where players are, and he knows where to how to get open, how to find the open ice, and again, not afraid to go into the corners or play with a bit of an edge as well.
So we're going to talk a little bit now about the London Knights, because with Team USA selecting on Monday, they've baffled me in the past. They've left guys like Brandon Saad off the roster and Christian Dvorak last year. Now, Christian Dvorak's got 52 points. He's got more points than Marner. He's got more points than Tkachuk, who I think is going to possibly go as high as second in the draft. Is there a way that Team USA could leave him off the roster still? Do you possibly see this happening?
Oh, well, I looked at the possible forwards for the U.S., and it looks like it's a very tough it's very tough to make the cuts. I'm not sure. I know that there has been talks about politics in the past with picking mm-hmm. CHL players and players that decided not to take the U.S. route. So mm-hmm. I think that's definitely has changed a little bit, but there might still be some politics in there. I'm not as familiar with that side of it, but I mean, there's so many players on London that U.S. born players on London that could easily make an impact on the tournament. And I think that's actually the U.S.'s biggest strength coming in. I don't think they're as strong in net anymore, but definitely the offense is there.
I agree. And
Kath,
do you think – go ahead, Ant.
No, you please finish, Rick. Go ahead, you finish.
Well, I was just going to say, do you think – with that said, it does seem like in the last few years – and look, I like Blackwood and I like Mason McDonald – but it does seem like the last few years, the quality of the Canadian goaltending, even though they're still winning, I mean, look, Team Canada is always loaded, but the quality of the Canadian goaltending seems to be going down a little bit. And I can't really put my finger on it, but Team USA has had some better goaltending the last couple of years, still not able to win it. But
yeah.
Do you have any reason for that? Have you noticed that?
I think it's just a matter of it just fluctuating over time. I don't think that there is any reason to be concerned. But So I don't know if you're aware, but the CHL actually has a rule of European goaltenders. They don't allow them anymore.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that was, I think, a bit of the reaction from that point. But I don't believe that there's actually anything to be worried about at the moment, at least. But
okay.
Catherine, on a more sort of broad scale, one of the big obvious concerns at the NHL level is the fact that there's, you know, a precipitous lack of scoring at the top level. And I guess my question is to you, do you think it's due potentially to patterns you might have noticed potentially with, like, more emphasis on system playing versus development at the junior level?
The interesting thing about junior hockey is that I find there's actually more goals just because there's more mistakes that are made.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I think that kind of makes it more exciting for some fans.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's more of a lack of scoring chances rather than goals. I know that they have said that they want more goals, but I think they should actually be focusing on the lack of scoring chances. And I do think definitely that that's caused by the coaching and the way that they play defensively. We're always taught that wins championships, and they just have to find ways of breaking the coverage and breaking systems and just finding out what the highest percentage of play is. And then I think would definitely help.
Mm-hmm.
Makes sense. So when you look at things this year, is Erie the team to beat? Is Sarnia going to get better? Is London the team to beat? I mean, I've liked Erie all year. There's a lot of guys on Erie. Maybe their goaltending isn't as good as some of the other teams, but how do you feel it's going to shake out? I've covered a few Memorial Cups, two or three of them. I don't know if I'll get out there this year, but who do you favor coming out?
Well, I actually thought that the East was going to be the favorite this year, but I definitely think that's changed. Erie, I was a little bit surprised that they were doing as well as they were. I didn't think that they'd be finishing or being going for first in the league. I thought they were more kind of on the cusp of home ice advantage.
Mm-hmm.
But I think Erie's definitely up there. I mean, it was just the way they're playing. It's hard to stop any of them. Just with DeBrincat, Strome, Tyler Radish, Kyle Maximoff. I can't even say his name right now. Kyle Maximovich. They all have. It's just so good offensively. I think for sure what you said, that goaltending might be the one area where they might falter, but just the way that they've been playing offensively has just been outstanding. I think they have 6 players with 20 points or more than that, so it's pretty pretty even scoring as well among the lines, so it's not just DeBrincat that's scoring. So.
All right. Ant, you have any other questions?
One last question. I know it indicated, even though it's sort of kind of not quite exactly outside of the OHL in this case, but Catherine, I did sort of have a brief mention to you about the Big Ten and what the big legislation that potentially is going to be up for vote in April about the lowering of the age limits for incoming recruits from 21 to 20 in some of the ages. In what ways do you see there being potential impact with regards to the potential, you know, impact with regards to players and options of going to college versus going to the O?
Yes, it's pretty interesting. When I was reading about that, I'm not even sure if it would be beneficial for the NCAA. It seems like it might not have a huge effect on the CHL development.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it might not have any effect at all, but it also might be maybe it will deter potential players deciding between the NCAA and the CHL.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think one of the positives of NCAA was the ability to develop as an older player, so kind of help the late bloomers.
Mm-hmm.
And that might, if someone doesn't believe that they can, it might be something that deters them from wanting to go to the NCAA.
Mm-hmm.
But on the same point too, it might. I know that there's talk about how it's the Big Ten teams that would benefit from it because they're able to attract the big players and the smaller teams can't compete. So I don't know if that would also weaken the NCAA landscape.
Mm-hmm.
So it might be something that a player might see that and not want to play with play against teams that might not be as good. Although, the CHL still has those teams as well, but
right.
Yeah.
There's always going to be this struggle between the CHL and the NCAA.
Even if this
goes through, it's just always going to be there. There's always going to be competition. I don't know if that'll ever end. I mean, it's one of those things. But Catherine, we really appreciate you coming on. Everybody should check out the 67 Report and follow you on Twitter. I found you have a good sense of humor and you do a really good job of covering the sport. And thanks so much.
Thank you.
Take care, thanks. Catherine. Thank you.
You too. All right, bye.
All right, Ant. So the Flyers eked one out again tonight. It was funny because
I was on
NHL Network Radio today, and they were asking me to sort of talk about the Flyers and explain the differential. And, you know, we came to the conclusion, myself and Simmer, that when they lose big, and when they win, this is how they win. They win close games. And,
yeah,
they, you know, that's sort of how it's going to be this year, but they're winning a little more lately. I don't know. I get the feeling people now are starting to expect more. Do you get that feeling?
Once you get to four, especially at this point right now, I think when they sparked off and won that game against the Rangers, and again, I always have to look at that Saturday game against New York and obviously have to cage that with the fact that Stepan was out of the lineup and he's a notorious Flyer killer. And obviously Lundqvist wasn't in net, although, Antti Raanta has had a pretty good year. And the Rangers have been in a little bit of a nadir recently, up and down. But they caught him at the right time there. But the Ottawa game, to me, really sort of indicated, that they're starting to have a little bit more confidence in their play. And then tonight against the Devils, it was an up-and-down game. But it does say something, you know, I mean, granted, they lose the lead late, but then win it in overtime. It does sort of speak to that they are not, you know, sort of getting shaken in completely. I mean, again, you have to sort of couch it and look at it and say, hey, what are the biggest differences in how they're playing now versus earlier in the season? You could look at it potentially and say, you know, a little more adherence to Dave Haxtell's system or understanding it a little bit more. Certainly the transition play has been better. A lot of people are going to point to the addition of Shane Gostisbehere to the back end there in terms of the better transition play. Also putting Evgeny Medvedev back into the lineup as well, and he's been better, you know, of late. And again, you expect that out of a $3 million defenseman. And today he was in more of a offensive type of role versus when he first came back, as he gets paired with Nick Schultz, and he looked pretty good against New Jersey. And again, they also limited New Jersey's chances in the game, and that's another staple of Dave Haxtell's system, is making sure to staple down and put as much pressure as possible at all points, specifically in the neutral zone. And we saw a lot of that, I think, in this game. So ultimately, again, I think sort of, and especially in Philadelphia right now, we all know how things have been in Philadelphia with regards to their sports teams right now. And it's been a pretty, you know, November was, yeah, exactly.
Actually, I'm going to say one thing. I don't know, for the people that watch the Daily Show, you know, Trevor Noah did something different, because while he did show the snowball incident that, you know, again, it drives some people crazy in the media, what he did do then after was said, I'm sorry, Philadelphia, because he was saying I'm sorry to everybody. That was part of the shtick. Mm-hmm. And he goes, I'm sorry your team suck. He did say that.
and I have a feeling even people from Philly laughed at that.
I have a feeling.
And honestly, you have to look at it and they have been. It's been pretty bad.
What happens in sports?
Yeah, you go through hot times. You go through good times. I mean, you look at the, you know, the late aughts, and the Phillies were consistently in the playoffs, and the Eagles were, you know, usually contending, and the Flyers made their play. You know, under the, you know, in the Richards era, were making their, you know, playoff pushes, and obviously 2010. So it was a good few years there, starting off with the Phillies World Series. But again, it's been, you know, the pendulum has swung hard the other way. So again, getting back to the Flyers, again, getting four wins in a row and pipping up yourself a little bit above 500 here gives you at least sort of a little bit of a sliver of some kind of hope. But again, you have to sort of keep things within perspective of where they're at and, you know, the early hole that they sort of they put themselves in. And, again, the differential being for Philadelphia what it's been, they're still a minus 17. Again, their road record certainly getting, you know, starting to look a little bit better. And, again, overall, again, 6 wins in their last 10 games. They won 4 in a row. You know, they're out of the hole. They're a little bit, you know, they put a little bit of a gap. They put a 6-point gap between themselves and Columbus, who they play tomorrow.
Right.
So in that respect,
which would be an interesting game.
Mm-hmm, and it gets themselves sort of in the, you know, it gets them into the in, a little bit more into the picture. Again, overall, they've looked better and they've looked
mm-hmm.
competent, and they're not getting their clocks handed to them
right.
at times earlier in the season where they had been. So. That's the sliver of light there, certainly for them.
No, that's fair. All right, so the last team that I want to talk about, because I keep hearing the same message from certain shows, and I want to commiserate here with the Edmonton
mm-hmm.
Oilers fan for a minute.
Mm.
When you haven't made the playoffs in 9 years, and trust me, I was covering the Rangers when they hadn't made the playoffs in, I think it got up to 10 years, right?
Yeah.
It's rough. And you as a fan don't want to hear, just be patient, it's going the right way anymore. Like, you just don't. And I get that because, look, Connor McDavid came in, he got injured, yeah. They're still at the bottom. At the end of the day, Cam Talbot, Klefbom gets signed, McDavid comes in, Dreisaitl's playing better, they still have no defense, and they're still at the bottom, and they still have... are still reluctant to trade any of their picks. If I were a fan, I would be very upset. There's just no way around it.
We would be, but at the same time, again, this is and it's, you know, ad nauseum with the regime change, but and it's tough to say, but again, Chiarelli has never shown, at least in my experience and seeing in what he's done in his throughout his GMing career, tends to be a pretty patient guy and sort of waits things out a little bit and
mm-hmm.
when he'll make a move, he'll make his move. But, you know, now, again, early in the year, again, anybody who sort of came into the season thinking that the Oilers were going to be a postseason contender or at least some, getting themselves in the picture because they had McDavid, that was wishful thinking. I mean, there's still
Agreed.
A lot of
but
work
how about
had,
just
there still has to be
some
a
hope. There's no hope yet. How about some hope?
Again, dark night. It's still at the moment for that team
yeah.
right now. I mean, look at them. It's them, and then, of course, you know, the Battle of Alberta right now isn't exactly looking all that great either because Calgary's right
no.
there with them, and they were a postseason team last year.
They
so
were.
Not to change the subject, but they're a minus 30. They're even they're
minus
even worse
30. That's
minus
hard
30,
to believe.
They're a minus 30 differential for a team that, you know, made it to the second round of the playoffs last year. They're getting, you know, bombed this year.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
again, I have to sort of couch that. And, again, with Edmonton, it's tough. I agree with you. It is a tough thing to be asked. But, again, when you're starting anew with a new GM and a new regime, you know, should this move have happened sooner? Should they have, you know, moved on from the McTavish era sooner than that? Probably, yeah. But again, there's a whole cultural mindset that has to be established now for the Oilers in terms of just getting sort of getting themselves out of the hole that they're in as a team. And the problem is, again, so many of those younger players have been sort of there, have been there and have just known nothing but losing at this level.
Right.
And
right.
that's as much a mindset thing of breaking yourself out of that. And it's very tough. It's very tough.
No question. And we'll leave it there. That's it for Off the Post. And we'll catch everybody next time.
Take care, everybody.